Welcome back to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry. Here's your host, Brother Robert Johnson.
Welcome back to the show. This is episode 352 in the news this week. I just wanted to remind everybody that we did, in fact, update the website, wcypodcast.com, where we have all of our episodes. We have updated it in order to streamline it a little bit and freshen up the design. So we have a new logo. It's a throwback to our originals. And, of course, we are going with WCY Podcast. We are still Whence Came You, but more people refer to us as WCY than anything else, so we thought we would just embrace that. So check that out if you've not been to our website in a couple weeks. In addition, wanted to thank everybody out there who is picking up our book called It's Business Time, Adapting a Corporate Path for Freemasonry, a book that was written by myself and Brother John T. Ruark when we thought that there were some really great business ideas that we could adapt to work in Freemasonry if we'd only apply the Masonic teaching to those corporate policies. So check out that book. You can go to wcypodcast.com and go on our website there. It's on the left-hand side. You can pick it up in either print or on Kindle. It's coming to Audible very soon. If you'd like to get an autographed copy, you're going to do something a little different. Go to wcypodcast.com and click on Limited Edition Shop. Scroll to the bottom of the page and you'll see a link there. You can buy it right there, and it is $15, and it's a couple dollars to ship to you, but I'll autograph it and send it out to you. So thanks again to everybody out there who is doing that. A big shout out to everybody who is getting ready for Camp Masonry, which is happening in August. It's going to be a fantastic time right around the corner too, so check those out. If you want to know more, visit campmasonry.com. Last week, we had the pleasure of having a couple fellas on with the program or the app called Amity. I highly suggest you check out that interview. It was a wonderful time to talk to those gentlemen, and what they have come up with is so great that I actually just decided to retire the WCY Podcast's Find a Lodge Excel-based tool. So we've gotten rid of that. Instead, if you go to wcypodcast.com, click on More, and you can, down there, it just says Amity. You can click that. It'll take you right there. Or if you just want to go direct to their website, go to amity.copiri.com. That's amity.copiri.com. A couple weeks ago, we mentioned that we would be reading a few pieces that received quite the response. Of course, I am referring to a piece that I wrote, which got a tremendous response, and I was really excited about that. I was bracing for the worst in terms of criticisms about what I had to say, but it seems that I struck a chord with a lot of folks, and they agreed with me, and so I said, well, I'll read that on the show, but that's not much of a show. So actually, Worshipful Brother Gregory Knott wrote a follow-up to my article, and I'll read both of those for you this week. But in between, we'll take a break, and we'll talk with illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison as he brings us this week's segment of the Masonic Minute. So without any further delays, let's get right into this week's first piece. So this week's first piece is called Shadows Burned Onto the Walls, Addressing Freemasonry's Biggest Problem, by Midnight Freemason contributor Robert H. Johnson. Freemasonry is a wonderful organization. Its members hold it to the highest regard. Whether active in all things Masonic or simply a man who receives the degrees and carries his dues card around for the rest of his life without attending another degree or a meeting, we value the membership. At the thought of getting suspended for non-payment of dues, we pay a forgotten invoice. At the thought of closing the temple, we rally to fundraise. When confronted with facts regarding the organization's declination, we hold endless dialogue until we all feel good and convinced about our future, our current action, and our past choices. Today, Freemasonry claims 1.1 million members. A mere 50 years ago, we had almost five times the membership. This speech isn't intended to cover or rationalize the dwindling membership. We know the reasons. Definitively, we gained members who valued something the fraternity had, a social aspect, a gathering place, which was a rare occurrence in the linear progression of time. That is, it aligned with the societal norms of the day. Have no fear, just like styles go through cycles, so do societies, trends in some ways. We will again see uptick in membership someday. More to the point. This fraternity, which boasts a membership that loves itself so much that would seemingly do anything for the craft, has for all of this grandeur in the mind empty lodges, empty participation, and empty sidelines. There are arguments for why this is, fulfillment being one, but this is still not what I am referring to. We have, even in the ranks of the craft, a general issue of participation. A lodge meets for business on a summer meeting, a rarity, since it usually goes dark this time of year. The worshipful master called a special meeting to discuss finances, come up with a way to raise funds and collect volunteers. Men show up. They even come out of the woodwork, as it was unusual for the master to call such a meeting. It must be important. The members heard the report. They were roused. A date was picked. An event was planned, and volunteers were gathered and assigned duties. However, this was not without the master having to ask men sitting in the lodge if they would assist. This should have been a red flag, but it wasn't. Fast forward a few months, calls, emails, and communications regarding the event were received by all. It's the morning of the event, a bit foggy outside, but warm. The master pulls into the parking lot. Empty. It's early yet, they'll trickle in. He walks to the door, unlocks it, and wanders inside. He hits the lights, turns on the coffee, and heads back out to the car to grab the box of donuts and treats that he purchased to feed his volunteers. The master begins to set up the lodge for the event. He repositions tables, pulls out a few more since he is expecting a crowd. He sets up the lodge for anyone who wants a tour, and before you know it, it's been an hour. The event is set to start soon. Just then, a member walks through the front door. It's not one of the volunteers, but a member of the lodge, and decides to see what he can do to assist. The master has the brother wander around and just straighten up the place a bit. Another hour passes. No one has come. The master makes several phone calls to his officers. He leaves voicemails, gets hung up on by full mailboxes, and those he did get a hold of, well, it turns out they can't make it due to some family event. The master sat down and took a breath just then. The other brother, who had shown up earlier, announced he had to take off, but wished the lodge luck on the day's event. The front door to the lodge closed as the master sat there in his chair, not even touching the coffee that he'd poured. He stood up, walked to the front door, and locked it. He walked back to the kitchen, dumped the coffee, gathered his items, and left for home. The donuts left on the counter, likely to be eaten by the members at the next meeting if the mice didn't get to them first. On the drive home, the master felt a sense of something that had been growing. He had many questions come into his mind. Where was everyone? Why didn't they come? Why did they say that they would be here if they couldn't? Why did this always happen? And maybe most importantly, why was he still surprised by the turnout? A few hours later, a man pulled into the parking lot of the lodge. He had read about an event at the local lodge. He was interested in joining and thought this was a great chance to get some information. So he decided to work it into his day before grabbing some lunch with his family. The family waited in the car as the men walked to the door of the lodge. From the parking lot, the lodge looked closed, and the lot was also curiously devoid of cars. But there was a parking garage, and so perhaps that's where everyone parked. The man got to the door, gave a gander inside through the glass windows. No lights, no noise, no one. It was empty. The lodge was closed. The man thought he must have missed it. Maybe it was a different day. He checked Facebook. No, today was the day of the event. It should be open right now. He turned and headed back toward the car. As the man strapped on his seatbelt, his wife asked him what was wrong. The man simply declared, "No one was there," and drove his family to lunch. When things like this happen, we think about so many things. We condemn it. We justify it. We go the rounds month after month and wonder what the magic formula is which might offer some form of menial success. At first, our leadership tends to become upset at the men who seemingly shirked in their duty to the lodge. After some years, this same scenario can play out, and instead of anger, we justify the action of non-participation. We chalk it up to, quote-unquote, family first, or the volunteer mentality. We then come back to square one and ask ourselves why this is. Ultimately, we find that this may actually be as it has always been. One hears of the glory days of Freemasonry, when 50 or more men would show up to dinner, when the wives had an auxiliary and made the meals, served the dinners, and played cards whilst the men were in the meetings. The kids were in the parlor, talking about De Molay, Rainbow, or Job's daughters. But this is truly a myth. While it may have happened once in a while, it was certainly never the norm. One need only pull out the minute books and count the signatures to verify this. When we look into Freemasonry, many of us want to find a cure for what is ailing this beloved craft. But what exactly is ailing us? Is it laziness? Is it apathy? Is it a sense of worthlessness? Maybe it's all of these things. In an organization that's been built over the last 70 years to sustain a massive membership, it's no secret that the sheer amount of members we had were not all truly interested in what Masonry is supposed to be. That continuity between the social trend and something Masonry offered opened the doors, and those doors were never truly closed again. We've initiated many men who had no idea what they were joining, a fact that was confirmed by the Grand Lodge of Colorado in the 1990s. Results came in the form of a survey they sent out to all those who were suspended for non-payment of dues. The more men we let in, the more possibility for failure exists. This is simple probability. The more members we have, the greater probability that our lodges are flooded with men who are not truly committed in the way we want them to be. We've lost nearly 4/5 of who we were. I, myself, have justified this in terms of what I call refinement. I and many have called attention to the fact that we are measuring ourselves to a false standard, something that was not the norm. And while the fact of membership numbers can be shown to us, the myth of epic participation haunts us still. Are our members lazy? All too often, our members will confirm that they'll be at an event. They will tell us how excited they are, and when we're setting up for the event, when we're bringing in the donuts and putting on the coffee, we notice no one is coming. We check Facebook and see those same excited members posting about going to the gym, waking up late, or some other family event. Begin the cycle outlined in the above narrative. We might inquire with this member why he didn't show up. The answer is all too often that they forgot. We ask ourselves again, how do you forget? It's on social media. We did a call. You RSVP'd via social media, which means it's on your calendar. The phone even alerts you the night before the event. But we dare not press the issue for fear of being unbrotherly. We are, after all, family first, and they are volunteers. Are we apathetic? In the beginning, no. As a seasoned Masonic veteran, absolutely. When we use terms like veteran, it typically conjures imagery in our minds of a man who spent tens of years completing tasks, pulling his weight, making it happen, whatever it was, no matter what, a breast filled with bars and rank insignia. This may also apply in Freemasonry, but in truth, today's Masonic veteran has been in the craft less than 5 years. They've been master of their lodge. They've headed up Masonic education to some extent. They've taken their expertise in modern technology and dedicated countless hours to bringing the local lodge, or maybe even the Grand Lodge, to the 21st century. Recent data compiled by the State Education Officer of Illinois in 2017-2018 shows definitively that the average time from joining today to being the master of your lodge is little more than 5 years. These Masonic veterans of today push with everything they have for results. All too often, they're met with questions regarding their motive, their attitude, and their expectations. They are told to, quote-unquote, be the change, which is absolutely the epitome of irony in an organization so against progression. And finally, after years of trying, they give up. They agree to do one thing, fulfill themselves, and leave the craft to fend for itself. If the leadership across the organization is not going to listen, then there's no point in talking. They become apathetic to the entire organization. Men just stop caring. And can we blame them? It seems all too often the men who are working for the betterment of the craft do so only at the meetings, to be seen, to shake hands, to offer assistance, and yet, in the space between meetings, there's nothing being done. The apathetic see this as title chasing. They watch these men climb the ranks, and for what? A purple apron? A red hat? A white hat? The awards going to men who have done little to progress the craft and done much to tout the craft, and perhaps only when someone is looking. Where are these high-ranking members when the local lodge needs them? Where are the regular dues card carriers when the lodge needs to simply open? We're left asking ourselves the same questions we started out with, and I fear there is no real answer. We romanticize the fraternity. We utilize our inherent human flaw of justifying inaction because it allows us to justify our reason for perpetual action. Our senior members, many of whom succumb to the cognitive bias of Declanism or believing that the past was better than it was. the modern brother trying so hard to live up to these things and eventually giving up. This speech is not intended to be a call to action, as it's infrequent that words can drum up any kind of long-lasting support for a cause. Sure, speeches have riled mankind to win battles, wars, and vote. But whilst you all may sit there in the audience agreeing with the words that I'm saying, while you nod your heads in agreement, while you take notes and write down ideas about what can be done, we should all understand that after this moment, after today, after next week, you'll have forgotten, and none of this will matter to you until the next meeting, that is, if we even show up. I offer no solutions but to fulfill your own Masonic desires, to vote with your feet and let whatever happens to Masonry happen. Work to improve things, and if it doesn't happen, then try to move on and focus your energy where you think it will make an impact. Don't let the apathy, laziness, and fair-weathered Masonic experience get you down. As a great man and mentor once told me, you have to be okay with Masonry the way it is. Work on your own path. If you are taking notes, if you were having little ideas about things while hearing or reading this, I hope you stopped and wrote those down. Those are the ideas which can be tried and tested. Those are the ideas which may change the future of this fraternity. To be sure, not all of the ideas you'll conjure up are good, but some of them certainly will be. If we don't work to make our experience better, to get ourselves in the seats, to read the books, to bring these things to the lodge, to make men better, it's going to continue to be an empty experience, both literally and figuratively. We gaze at the shadows of the great fraternity, burned into the walls with wonder, like an archaeologist looks upon a dead language. We are reminded that, while we respect the past, we cannot be a slave to what was. It's time to work harder on what you want. Respectfully, Right Worshipful Brother Robert H. Johnson, 2018.
The port closest to London, Clacton-on-Sea, served as a major shipping channel in 19th century England. Weather, rocks, and shifting conditions made it an especially treacherous place to navigate and, as might be expected, the waters there claimed many ships and human lives. In 1875, Albert Edward, Prince of Wales, Grand Master of the Grand Lodge of England, and later King Edward VII from 1901 to 1910, voyaged to India. Thankful for his safe return 8 months later at Clacton-on-Sea, the Grand Lodge of England decided to make the port safer by donating a lifeboat in his name. With more than 4,000 spectators in attendance, they dedicated and launched the Albert Edward lifeboat on July 10, 1878, amidst pomp and circumstance fit for the future king. An unknown poet immortalized the event with an official poem which said in part, "Built from henceforth life to save, manned by crew so strong and brave, launched the boat with ringing cheer. Honor the name to all now dear. Honor the dead in the living sun. Honor the love so justly won. Albert Edward, I to be the sailor's friend on this eastern sea. Honor the craft whose generous thought so much of sterling good has wrought. Honor the gift that they have given to save a man's life, if willed by heaven. Honor the true hearts ever found when storms and tempests rage around, to leave their homes where loved ones weep and brave the perils of the deep." By the day of the dedication, the Albert Edward had already proven its worth. Delivered to Clacton prior to the official launching, the lifeboat saw its first action on May 23rd, when the ship Garland, on a voyage from Shields to London, ran aground and broke up. The crew rowed for 3 grueling hours to reach the stranded vessel and save the lives of 6 men and 3 boys on board. No one will ever know how many crewmen, most of whom were likely Freemasons, lost their lives in this dangerous service. However, the 1884 proceedings of the United Grand Lodge of England made note of the following: that the sum of 50 guineas, which is about $5,000 today, be granted to the family of the late James Cross, and a similar sum to the family of Thomas Cattermole, two of the crew of the Albert Edward lifeboat at Clacton-on-Sea, which boat was presented to the National Lifeboat Institution by Grand Lodge. These two men, after having assisted the first in saving 116 and the second 33 lives, having lost their own in the discharge of their duty on the night of the 23rd of January last, whilst in their boat, endeavoring to rescue the crew of a vessel in distress, leaving their families consisting of a widow and six children, and a widow and three children entirely destitute. For over half a century, from 1878 to 1929, the Albert Edward and its two successors of the same name guarded the port of Clacton-on-Sea and saved countless lives. Today, Freemasons still take part in rescues there and at other ports. In addition, the fraternity regularly donates funds to the Royal National Lifeboat Institution, which oversees life-saving operations throughout Great Britain. For the Whence Came You podcast, this is Steve Harrison with the Masonic Minute.
All right, many thanks goes out to illustrious Brother Stephen L. Harrison for his always amazing contributions to this program. There is no better commercial for Freemasonry than listening to Steve tell a really awesome story like this. So huge thanks goes out to Brother Harrison. Anybody out there who is interested in picking up a copy of one of Steve's books, please check those out. You can go to wcypodcast.com, click on more, and click on the bookstore. It'll take you there. You'll see many of his books out there, and you can pick them up right from Amazon.com. Next up, this is a response to the article that I wrote, which we just read, and this is by senior Midnight Freemason contributor, worshipful brother Gregory J. Knott, and it's titled, If Not Us, Then Who? Midnight Freemasons editor Robert Johnson recently wrote an outstanding piece titled Shadows Burned Onto the Walls, Addressing Freemasonry's Biggest Problems. This article expressed in very clear terms the thoughts and concerns that I and so many other brethren have had over the years. If you have not read this article, stop reading now. Click the link above and go read it. Seriously. If you are like me, the article left me shaking my head and thinking, yes, this is spot on. Brother Johnson ends the article with some very frank and wise words about what is needed in the fraternity. Quote, if we don't work to make our experience better, to get ourselves in the seats, to read the books, to bring those things to lodge, to make men better, it's going to continue to be an empty experience both literally and figuratively. We gaze at the shadows of the great fraternity burned into the walls with wonder, like an archaeologist looks upon the dead language. We are reminded that while we respect the past, we cannot be a slave to what was. It's time to work harder on what you want. Let me reflect further on Brother Johnson's conclusions. I have been in a fraternity since 2007. In the past 10-plus years, I have been extremely active, joined numerous Masonic bodies, served as worshipful master of the lodge, brought one lodge back from the verge of extinction, and helped charter two new Masonic bodies, a High 12 Club and a new Royal Arch Chapter. I received Mason of the Year Award from the Valley of Danville in Illinois, 2015. I don't list all these activities to brag on myself, but merely to illustrate that I have been an active Mason. But I must be honest. There have been numerous times that I have wondered, why bother anymore? There are many ways to spend my time, and I am active in numerous other organizations, including serving as an elected community college trustee, attending my son's track meets, and my longtime passion, being a scout leader. If others don't care about Masonry, then why should I? But then I pause, and I think about the impact we're making. I recently met with two fellow craft Masons and worked with them on learning their catechism. They were nervous, but excited to join the craft and progressing through the degrees in that short meeting we had. They did nicely on learning their work and are ready to prove up at the next lodge meeting. It left me thinking, perhaps I was making a small impact on their lives, helping them develop themselves into better men by understanding what our fraternity stands for and giving them a framework for self-improvement. I do not have the answers for what the long-term solutions are for building this fraternity and ultimately building better men, but I do know this. If someone doesn't work on it, or more precisely, if we don't work on it, then who will? Honestly, what keeps me motivated and an active Freemason are the men like the contributors here at the Midnight Freemasons. Individuals like Brothers Denver R. Phelps and Stephen C. Hooper of my home lodge, Ogden 754 in Illinois, and countless others who put in their time and effort to make Freemasonry happen. In many ways, it is like the efforts I put into scouting. I don't see the full return today, but I know somewhere down the road what we are doing in scouting will make a difference. I think back to the men who stepped up to be my scout leaders. Many of them have passed away. But in their day, they put in the countless hundreds of hours to ensure that myself and all the other fellow scouts had opportunities to grow and learn. Ultimately, I earned my Eagle Scout badge in 1981, and it was with a special honor. Clearly, however, as a 15-year-old, I did not understand the full impact of what scouting had given me. 37 years later, being an Eagle Scout means much more to me today than it did then. Not because of the badge or the Eagle Scout medal, but because of the life lessons and core values which have helped shape my life, and ultimately who I am. This was made possible because of the volunteers that came every week to ensure that we could have a troop meeting, a camp out, or a canoe trip. I believe that Freemasonry operates in much the same way. The time spent working with a brother on a catechism, playing a part in a degree, reading some great works of Masonic authors, or providing some lodge education at a meeting might not yield an immediate return on our time investment, but we keep working in the quarries because we have the hope and knowledge that what we are doing will make a difference down the road on improving our individual lives and the lives of our brethren. Let me close by saying this. What we do matters. Our impact is real. The values we stand for are timeless and needed by society more than at any point in time or throughout history. We should not rest on our magnificent history or laurels of the past. Freemasonry is about building the future. If you won't step up, who will? If not us, then who? Gregory J. Knott, Worshipful Master, Ogden Lodge, 754 Ogden, Illinois. So I hope you guys liked that. I hope it riled you up. I hope you got excited about what the future can hold for Freemasonry and a purpose behind all of it. So to close it up this week, thanks everybody for donating to the show. If you haven't donated to the show, we do have a way to do that. Go to WCYpodcast.com. This podcast is produced by you. All the dollars that you donate to the show is how this show happens. It is listener-supported Masonic education. So if you go to WCYpodcast.com, click on direct donation through PayPal. It's right there at the top. You've got a couple options. You can make a one-time donation, which is always fantastic. I thank everybody who does this, whether it's a dollar or 50 cents or $5. It doesn't really matter. What matters is that money gets put right into our account, and then all of our bills just hit that, and we don't have to worry about it. The second way you can help out is if you decide that you've got a couple dollars every month that you'd like to donate. That's awesome. So we've got three levels that you can do. You can be a contributor at $2 a month, you can be a fellow at $5 a month, or you can be a producer at $10 a month. I do have to say that anybody who is out there who is donating monthly to this podcast, this doesn't happen without you. Thank you so much. And before we close out, my last bit of important information is that we did retire the WCY lapel pin. I've got a couple money clips left with that logo on there, but after that, they are gone. I have no more pins, no nothing. But here's the good news. We're working on a brand new design. It's going to be coming soon, and you can be excited about it. I'll tease some images once I get those images in hand, and of course, we'll offer a pre-sale once we get the image and the details. So I hope you guys all check that out. And that's it. So if you like Masonic podcasts, I know you do, you're listening to this one, please don't forget about the Masonic Roundtable, which goes live at 10/9 Central every Tuesday night. Next week, we're going to be talking about the Grand Lodge of either Virginia or D.C. We're doing a series of history podcasts over the next few weeks, so stay tuned and watch those. Contribute to the conversation. We're running live chat on YouTube as we do the episodes. Additionally, you heard me read a couple pieces from the Midnight Freemasons. Brother Travis Simpkins, you all know Travis Simpkins' artwork and his wife's wonderful artwork as well. Travis writes for the Midnight Freemasons, and he just wrote a wonderful piece about one of my favorite philosophers ever, Giordano Bruno. please head on over to midnightfreemasons.org, check out his latest article, drop him a line, let him know how much you loved it, how much you loved Giordano Bruno, and how much you like his artwork, because it's pretty much amazing. Until next week, everybody, I hope you all enjoyed the program. Stay on the level. For Vince Kamu, I'm Robert Johnson.
You've been listening to Whence Came You, a Masonic podcast featuring research papers and discussions related to Freemasonry with your host, Brother Robert Johnson. Be sure to join us for our next edition.